Welcome to episode 121 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown, and I guess we might have just about settled down from the rollercoaster ride that was the week 3 game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. From the kick 6 to the pick 6, we've got it all covered, and more. So as always, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum to break things down.
It's a win on the road. The Cardinals are 3-0. What more could you ask for? Well, maybe a more convincing win against arguably the worst team in the league, but here we are. We're 3-0. I'm excited to talk about the game. I'm excited to hear your opinion on quite a few things, actually, as well. I think there's a few controversies within the game and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So excited to get this episode underway.
Like, it's a really weird game to talk about. It's like there were so many highs, so many lows, like negatives, positives, everything.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, you know, as I alluded to there, you can only get so negative for a game that we ultimately won. But there's definitely a lot of, like, talking points, learning points, you know, places to build on.
Yeah, but before we get onto the game, we've actually got a tiny, tiny bit of news to talk about.
The news is that Brian Winters has been released.
And does anybody really know why?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody knows why, but I don't really have much of a comment about it either, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was out due to personal reasons from practice a couple of days last week, but that was the last we heard of it. And then the weekend came and he decided to release him and brought up two guys from the practice squad.
I mean, these things can sometimes be a case of, like, you know that you've got to release somebody to make room and to move things around. Definitely seemed to come out of nowhere a little bit, but, you know, ultimately, I don't think it's going to have a huge effect on the Cardinals.
No, I don't really think so, but, you know, I probably could have even gone through the whole episode without actually mentioning it, and no one would be any the wiser.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got a news section, and we might as well fill it with some news when there is some, because that's, I think, about the only bit of what we would call news for the week.
Yep, so we'll move on to pretty much the main event of this episode, which is the game recap of the Arizona Cardinals' 31-19 win over Jacksonville.
I mean, where do you even start with that game? Well, number one, Cardinals didn't cover the point spread that they were expected to.
They did? It was only 7.5.
Did they? I had it at 19, but there you go.
You were a bit over-optimistic then, I think.
Over-optimistic. Okay, well, I mean, okay, let's put it this way then. The Cardinals probably did less well than they were generally expected to going into this game. It's a game that was hyped up beforehand as something of a trap game for the Cardinals, with kind of Urban Meyer and everyone else being on, and Trevor Lawrence being on such a low after their first two games of the season. It was really expected that the Cardinals were going to walk it. And ultimately, they did, you know, nothing like that, especially in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, the first half was just weird in general. Like, we had a sluggish start, really, from the offense, you know, and a really strange end to the half. And then going into the second half, we pretty much dominated the game, and that was it, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, ultimately, it reminded me a lot of the Vikings game from week 2, insofar as it was in that game, the offense was firing a little bit better, and it was more the defense that was having troubles, but we went 7-0 up and then gave up 2 scores just before the half to go into the half losing. And then ultimately the team was able to rally at that halfway point and come out as the Cardinals that we know that they can be.
I suppose there was a caveat to that halftime deficit, though, which we'll get onto shortly.
What would your caveat be?
Well, I mean, like, how often do you see a 109-yard kick return at the end of a half?
That is very, very true. That is the asterisk to being behind there, I suppose. But yeah, odd game. And on top of that, no passing touchdowns from Kyler Murray.
Yeah. I mean, he did manage to contribute another one on the ground, but apart from that, it was basically running touchdowns all the way.
Yeah. And it seemed to work for them. So, you know, 31 points. I think I think ultimately with the offense that we have on paper, putting up any less than 30 points is almost a disappointment at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, like, obviously we started the season with 3 back-to-back games scoring 30-plus points. So how can you really be mad at that, really?
Yeah, indeed. And I think I put it out on Twitter somewhere, but the point differential that we have after three games is much lower than that of the 2015 Cardinals. But and that's also obviously one of the big storylines from this, is that the last time that the Cardinals went 3-0 at the start of the season was 2015 on the run to the playoffs. But the 2015 Cardinals differential at game three was plus 77. And the 2021 Cardinals point differential at game three is only plus 38. That being said, though, you know, the record is the same for both of them.
Yeah. Should we start with some negatives from this game, though? You know, get them out of the way first.
Yeah. I think all the negatives come with like a little bit of a positive insofar as like at least it's something you can build on. But yeah, one of them obviously being third down conversions.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously one of the most disappointing things to take from this game was how bad the Cardinals' offense were when it came to converting third downs and keeping drives alive.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, one third down conversion in the whole game, and it's not like it was rare for them to get into third down.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Lee was a pretty busy boy, let's put it that way.
He was, yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes you see these stats with like a, you know, low third down conversion rate, and you kind of look at it and you're like, oh, that's because they, you know, made it, they got first downs on first or second down every time. But yeah, the Jacksonville defense really managing to stump Kyler quite a few times.
Yeah, I think there was at least maybe two or three occasions where we had third and one or even shorter than that, and he just couldn't convert them because the offensive line just couldn't find any holes anywhere.
Well, I've got a bit of a bone to pick with that as well, because, and I've got no evidence to back this up particularly, but it seemed to me like the Cardinals were taking third and short out of the shotgun quite a few times. And that's something that is not ideal, because obviously then your running back or whoever is, you know, 5 yards further back into the backfield and then has to cover that distance as well as the line of scrimmage to the first down.
Let's be honest, though, if you're talking about the Arizona Cardinals, when are they not in shotgun?
That's a good point. But I mean, we did see plenty of looks of Kyler in the pistol, actually, this time.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still another one where he's further back. He's not under center, is he?
He's not quite under center, but it's something that would be, I guess, nice to see. Although, I guess, if you spend your entire time in the shotgun and then, you know, try and have any hope of telling, you know, telegraphing a pass play, starting him under center is not going to happen with that, right?
Yeah, and also the one third down conversion we did get, that was a pretty decent conversion, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was an exciting one as well, actually.
I think that was another AJ Green catch, wasn't it? Which obviously we'll talk about a bit more later with positives.
But no, I think overall, I mean, obviously third down percentage is going to be a huge factor in basically keeping Kyler on the field, because we know that when we keep Kyler on the field, good things can happen.
Yeah, and it's one of those things as well, like, obviously Jacksonville aren't, like, the toughest of oppositions, are they? So, like...
No, they're not. They're not.
We can maybe get away with it against them. No offense to them, obviously, but, yeah, maybe it isn't offensive, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, the way Jacksonville has been playing, obviously, they played better against us, I think, than they had done in the first two games. But, you know, if you played that against another defense, they might be, you know, really making you hurt for that.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously we've got a really tough three-game schedule coming up. So like, if you think about those games, like if we're going 1-for-9 or something like that on third down, you know, you're never going to win a game like that against them.
No, you really need to be able to pull something a bit better out of the bag there. And especially, I mean, like third and long, that's a whole different story. But for third and short, yeah, you really need to be able to convert those ones, you know, at least more than once a game, let's put it that way.
I think the next negative we can talk about is the sketchy run defense again.
Something that you could say is becoming a bit of a theme after the last game as well as this one, but something that wasn't present in game one.
Yeah, because I mean, like, in going into this one, we had James Robinson, Carlos Hyde, and Trevor Lawrence. They all ran for 5.9, 5.5, and 4.5 yards per carry on average, respectively.
Which is numbers that you just cannot be putting up, right? I mean, I think was it James Robinson that got their like long touchdown run?
Yeah, I don't think it was too long, but it was like maybe about 20-ish yards, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that number will inflate his average yards per carry, but I mean, it's not like he was short of carries throughout the game. So it's still a big number. And, you know, ultimately, if you're giving up more than 3 1/3 yards per carry, they can pretty much be, on average, running at every play and getting a first down.
I mean, it's a weird one because obviously going back to week one, they completely shut down Derrick Henry. But like last week, Dalvin Cook had a really good game. This week, you know, those three. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, maybe he's not so much he's just more of a quarterback who can run rather than a quarterback who does run. Like, you know,
exactly,
a Lamar Jackson or a Kyler Murray type.
But no, I, you know, like after the Vikings game, I can't remember if I defended them on this podcast or if I was just defending them in my head like this. But I was saying, you know, Dalvin Cook is a really, really good running back. He's, you know, top five. And he proved that against Seattle as well this week. He ran all over them as well.
He was out injured for that one.
Was he? I remember the Vikings having a good running game, but...
Yeah, it was their backup, that Alexander Mattison, because Dalvin Cook was out. Because we destroyed his ankles.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Forgot about all that. Well, ignore what I said there then. But still, I guess what I'm meaning is at least if Dalvin Cook has a really good game against you, you can go, oh, well, it's Dalvin Cook. You know, he's like a really, really good running back. Whereas when it starts to be, you know, James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, who are by no means terrible running backs, but it starts to be a more systemic problem, I guess you could say.
You can't really say that about James Robinson, really, because last year he was the fifth highest run, whatever it is. Like, he had the fifth highest running total in the entire league last year. That was an undrafted guy. And obviously this year, he spent a first-round pick on Travis Etienne, but obviously he got injured in preseason. So,
did you?
Yeah, maybe we'd have seen a lot of him had he been not injured, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, either way, I think... you know, regardless, you're giving up a lot of yards there. Both last week and this week really, really stalled the defense, I feel, because like quite a few times they would get the Jags down to third down and the Jags were able to convert easily and then on top of that gain extra yards on top of it. And that's the kind of thing that can really demoralize a defense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously as well, that's another thing we need to improve going into this run of games we've got, because obviously San Francisco and Cleveland are on the horizon and they're pretty much two of maybe the best running teams in the league. Cleveland has got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
And San Francisco, they've got whoever isn't injured that week.
Yeah, they've got some guys, but I mean, regardless, like, yeah, as you said, that's, you know, that's two teams with a really, really tough run. And the thing is, as well, is like, you know, at this point, we've now got enough of that bad run defense on film, and you can bet that offensive coordinators are looking at that tape already and going like, how can we exploit this the best we can?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really something you can really... I mean, you can obviously scheme against it, but then you're maybe like more weak or open to be passed on, you know, if you're stopping the run. So you just need to find like a happy medium between the two of them.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it might come down to personnel as well, you know, like which personnel you put on for what package. And maybe as well, like, put it this way, I'm nowhere near good enough at football and understanding it to tell you why this is happening. From watching the games, I can just tell you that there's, you know, it looks like missed assignments, it looks like holes are being opened really easily, and it looks like the open field tackling isn't happening until too late, basically. You know, how do you solve that? I guess you solve that by changing your personnel, changing your looks, and maybe you know, changing individual assignments on certain play types.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously something they're going to be working on in practice, you know, try and figure it out before the next game.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me wrong. I don't think this is a novel idea at all to say they should really be working on that run defense.
Yeah, we'll move on to our next negative, which is the kick six, as it's been christened. I don't know if anyone's christened it, but I've decided to call it that.
I believe that is like a known term, but yeah, the kick six. What can you really say about it? I guess we could start off by saying, like, was that a good shout to go for it?
I think it was, to be honest, because, you know, like, we always hear about how good Matt Prater's leg is, don't we? And, like, how he is in warm-ups and in practice, you know, he's hitting him from, like, 60-plus, maybe even 70 on occasions. So it's like, he's definitely got the leg to do it, but this just wasn't one of those occasions.
Yeah, the kick six, putting the kick out for NFL records, I'm actually all for it in a lot of ways. I think it's got shows cojones and all of that stuff. And I think on top of that, one of the factors might have been, as we've already alluded to, Andy Lee was getting a lot of action in that game. And I wonder if it was a case of, like, we just don't want to bring him out again and get him, you know, tired out almost. We don't want to get him, you know, messed up. And sometimes an arm punt is as good as a regular punt, especially at that distance. And maybe they were thinking the same thing with the kick, and they think, well, obviously if it doesn't go through, it's going to go for a touchback or something like that. It was just, you know, how often do you ever see a kick return for a touchdown?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's one of those things as well. Like, they were close enough to, obviously we know Kyler Murray's got a really good arm. So
yeah,
he was definitely within range for maybe a Hail Murray attempt.
Yes.
But obviously they decided to go with Matt Prater, and as we said, you know, it fell just short, and then Jamal Agnew returned it 109 yards.
I guess the thing with the Hail Murray is that, like, if that just falls incomplete, you know, neither intercepted nor caught, then you give away possession at that line. Whereas with the kick, at least, you know, if it goes out the back of the end zone, it's a touchback or whatever, and that's, you know.
No, actually, because at that point, there was like 2 seconds on the clock, really. So
that's true.
Hail Murray would have just ended the half, unless they picked it off and then obviously tried to return it that way.
Yeah. I'm glad that they tried it. I think it's a real shame the way that it did end. And I do think that could have been avoided potentially if you gave up a little bit on the kick blocking and had a couple of guys in there who were more ready to make an open field tackle. Because, you know, the thing with a kickoff is that you're, or well, any kick, I guess, is that you're bringing in a lot of big guys who can't run very fast.
Yeah, yeah. I see what you mean there, because obviously I think we'll get onto this in the next point as well, though, because of that.
Yes.
But it's like, we're going to say about the kick six anyway. Matt Prater ended up losing the NFL record this past weekend anyway.
Yeah, that's true. He could have kept it in the end, but that, I mean, that was some kick, wasn't it, from Justin Tucker?
One hell of a kick. Like, obviously, it hit the crossbar and then just managed to fall the right way across.
Yeah,
it.
Exactly. I've seen it before bounced back out off the crossbar, but just getting enough to get it across the line. And to be honest, I don't think Matt Prater was that far, you know, short of getting that kick.
I think it was maybe like a couple of yards short, given like the trajectory of it, how it fell just below.
Yeah.
You know, so it could be returned.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because if it had fallen just below, it would have been out the back anyway.
Different conditions, say.
Yeah, given a bit of a tailwind or something like that.
Yeah, and also it was a pretty humid day in Jacksonville. If that was like indoors somewhere with like a bit of, what's the word?
A bit of altitude or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the one. Because Jacksonville's at sea level, isn't it? So
it is, you know, yeah. It's like pretty much on the beach. So
if he's in a dome somewhere, you know, that's pretty high up.
Or he's altitude. In Denver or something, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he did actually break the record in Denver, didn't he?
Yeah, the most of the longest kicks come in Denver. So, but yeah, there you go. I mean, you've already alluded to it as well, but realistically, probably the worst outcome from the kick six is not the return score; it's the injury.
Yeah, because I mean, we went into this game with Calvin Beecham already ruled out with a rib injury, and then we ended up losing both Justin Pugh and Justin Murray at almost the same point in the game. And I believe Justin Pugh got hurt on the kick six return.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff going around saying that they both got hurt on the kick six, but I believe that has been refuted and that Murray was hurt just before the kick six.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we had backups like Sean Harlow and Max Garcia who came in, and he really didn't notice much of a difference between them.
There was a big shuffle in the offensive line. I believe that the movement was like, you know, they had to move the tackle out to guard, and they brought in another tackle off the bench as well. But next man up, right? Especially when it comes to the offensive line. And we talked about this at the start of the season, actually, like how important it was to have good depth there. And there we are seeing the result of it.
Yeah, the thing is, though, with the Cardinals' offensive line, through 3 weeks, they're actually once again the team with the fewest quarterback hits allowed. I think it's only six or seven so far.
Yeah, they've been keeping Kyler really, really clean. And I think it's important to note that a lot of the success that Kyler's been getting is because he's been, you know, kept so clean.
Yeah, and it's another one of those things as well, though, because of his ability with his legs. He's able to actually get away from the tackles, isn't he?
Oh, so
he's not taking
sure.
those unnecessary hits.
Yeah, exactly. Like a more stable quarterback would be taking those. And actually, I mean, like any QB who is not absolutely sprinting around the field like he does would be taking a hell of a lot more hits like that.
Yeah, someone like Carson Wentz or someone with two sprained ankles. He's on 31 hits so far this season.
Oh,
yeah. That's through three games.
That cannot be good for you. But yeah, I mean, as you said, the Cardinals' O-line has generally been pretty good, except for maybe something to be desired in terms of creation of running lanes. But in terms of quarterback protection, pass protection, they've been pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, we've got no idea of the severity of the knocks on the two of them, but you know, no doubt we'll find out after recording or tomorrow when the recording actually comes out as a podcast. As is usually the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't doubt that they won't have said anything yet, you know, just because it's not worth saying anything yet. Although I have heard that for both of them, I believe it is back injuries, which is so hard to predict. You know, I think if we do hear any news, it will be that they are day to day.
Yeah, or they're just like not practicing much just to save them for the game. Another weird negative I've got down here, which was a strange one in the game, was a referee throwing the flag. Because obviously, we're Cardinals fans, we know a lot about flags being thrown on the Cardinals.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely know flags being thrown, that's for sure. But in all my years of watching football, I've never seen this.
Yeah, when a rogue flag from a back judge collided with a punt that Rondell Moore was trying to bring in, he subsequently muffed it and... Fortunately, we were able to recover it, but it's like,
yeah,
what would happen if the Cardinals didn't recover it? Could they have challenged that or something? Because it's like, it's not something to do with them, is it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, that something like that, you would judge it the same way that you would like a weather event or something, because it's clearly the back judge didn't mean it. That being said, like, it's something I've never quite understood is the need to have the flags thrown out as in the way that they are, you know, as this like big, you know, arching thing. Like, why can't they just be, you know, thrown onto the ground?
I think it depends where, because you like tried to throw it near where the
foul
offense
has
occurred. Yeah, so they know, like, when it comes to like breaking down what happened where, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. But like, you know, the back judge, if you look at it, he was close to the sideline where Rondell Moore was. He could have thrown it at his feet, for example, or behind him, you know, rather than in front of him and above him, essentially. Do you know what the flag was actually thrown for, is the question.
I think it was a block in the back on our returner.
Interesting.
Or like one of the, the gunners.
Yes.
Gunner. Yeah, because I remember the penalty being half the distance to the goal. So we were like starting that next drive on the 9-yard line.
Yeah, which is pretty grim. Yeah, well, I guess like
that's one thing as well from the game. Like, we didn't really have many drives starting in, I'd say, decent field position.
Yeah, they had some really, really solid punting.
Yeah, I mean, like, we had that one that started on the 1-yard line. You know, we had quite a few inside 10, definitely quite a few in the 20 as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of difficult starts to drives, and you know, I think that's the kind of thing you really need that momentum to get out of, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things as well, though. Like, obviously, we mentioned before about them not converting third downs. Like, if you're not converting a third down and you're on, like, the 15-yard line or something like that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you're already giving away the field position battle, aren't you?
Well, yeah, because then even if you stick on like a 40-50 yard punt or something like that, you're giving the ball away in midfield.
Yeah, they're pretty much starting on midfield, which I think they did a couple of times as well.
They did. Yeah, I think in a lot of ways we were pretty lucky that we got away with as few scores as we did. And I think I was about to move on to positives, but I was going to try and find a segue in. But we do have one more negative that I think is worth mentioning before we.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very often we actually have Kyler Murray in the negatives, but, you know, once again, he had to try and throw the Hollywood ball and it was picked off.
Yeah, I should note as well, by the way, that to avoid writing Kyler Murray in the negatives, Tom has written Calamari. So that's always good. But yeah, it was another attempt to make the big flashy play and it didn't go well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was someone like wide open, probably halfway down the field. You know, he could have had an easy completion too, but no, he decided to try and go for, I think it was Christian Kirk in double coverage.
Pretty much triple coverage. If you look, there was like a floating safety underneath who was like 2-3 steps away from being in that scuffle as well. Don't get me wrong, I think Christian Kirk's come up with some really, really clutch catches for the Cardinals, especially this year. But you know, you can't be thrown into that, especially it was like a second and eight or something like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a need to be making this play at this moment of time sort of play, was it?
Yeah, I think, you know, like if that happens and it's like, you know, third and 20 after penalties or something like that, you can kind of almost forgive it because you need to go for the big one. But it was, yeah, I think there was definitely something wrong with the checkdowns on that play.
But we'll leave the negatives now because, you know, we've got positives to talk about.
And ultimately, we can only talk about so many negatives in a game that we still won by like 12 points.
Yeah, it just seems to be like we'll talk too much about negatives and, you know, it's so much easier to be negative as a Cardinals fan as it is to be positive.
It's like the initial reaction, isn't it? But like, let's go into the positives. And to mirror the negatives, we've got Kyler Murray in the positives.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, how can you stay mad at Kyler Murray? You know, he does silly things from time to time, but he's still arguably the most exciting player the Cardinals have had in who knows how long.
Ultimately, like when you look back at the past few years, you know, there was Josh Rosen, which we don't like to talk about. There was, you know, Carson Palmer before that. And it's not that the Cardinals weren't fun to watch. They weren't exciting to watch. But like, isn't it good to tune in every week to watch a team that always the commentators are going on about how exciting a team they are to watch, how dynamic they are, how you don't really know what's going to happen on the next play. And yeah, I think Kyler Murray's a lot to do with that at the moment.
And yet people don't rate Cliff Kingsbury or anything like that.
Yeah, I know. There's always people looking to get away from him there. And even people, you know, going off at Kyler Murray as well, who, you know, has managed to cover a whole bunch of franchise records, even in like going into his third year.
Yeah, I mean, another one to his name this past weekend is he became the first quarterback in the team's history to throw for 1,000-plus yards in the first three games of a season.
Yeah, I think our season predictions might be blown out of the water.
I mean, I'm happy to be wrong, you know, if it brings him MVP, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, that, you know, you want to talk about it being an exciting player and stuff like that. There's a lot of talk around Kyler Murray being an early favourite for MVP.
I think he is like joint favorite now. He's like 7-1 with like Patrick Mahomes and the usual bunch.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And I mean, given that he's the QB of one of five remaining undefeated teams, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, as well, like we mentioned, the passing yards are pretty impressive, but going into the, I mean, after this game, he's hitting 76% of his passes so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wild completion percentage. I mean, especially given that we've just rung him out for trying that Hollywood pass, you know, and trying to go for the big one. If you're hitting 76% of your passes, then, you know, it's almost like you kind of deserve to take that shot once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, he did hit 28 of 34 passes in this one for 316 yards.
Which is just brilliant, you know. On top of that, you know, continuing to be the guy who's able to get those rushing touchdowns. I think that rushing touchdown, our first one, was a Kyler classic, really, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the defensive hasn't, like, figured that out yet, because he's always going to pull the ball out if he sees a wide open space on the other side of the field, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think the fact that he's pulled that exact same move quite a few times now and, you know, been able to, like, dance into the end zone a little bit. I enjoyed the return of the not Baby Yoda celebration with that as well. He seems to have started a thing, by the way, with that. Do you see there was other players around the league doing it as well?
Yeah, I saw Chris Godwin did it as well. And also in the Premier League, Brentford player did it as well. After his third goal.
Oh man, that was great. Yeah, I like that. I like that that's kind of going around. It's quite sweet.
Whether or not he started it is another thing. But, you know, we'll take it as Kyler Murray starting it, you know, why not?
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, Kyler Murray can't do his job without the wide receivers doing their job.
Yeah, indeed. We're DeAndre Hopkins, again, quite quiet during the game, but the other two wide receivers, other two main wide receivers stepping up and having really, really good games, both AJ Green and Christian Kirk.
Yeah, because obviously we went into this one with DeAndre Hopkins as a game-time decision due to rib injury.
Yeah, he was still... we saw him on the field as we expected, but he held down only 3 catches for 21 yards.
Yeah, whereas AJ Green had 5 for 112 yards, including some really incredible grabs, and Christian Kirk with 7 for 104. Continuing his superb start to the season.
Yeah, when it comes to AJ Green specifically, I can't say I watched him a huge amount in the last few years, but, you know, he definitely looks like he is out there having a lot of fun with the Cardinals. He looks like he's enjoying his role. He looks like he's settling in very well, which is always brilliant to see. And yeah, Christian Kirk really coming up clutch with being an excellent slot receiver.
Yeah, he's definitely got a... Like, obviously, we've moved him into the position where, obviously, that's his best one. And he seems to be thriving. You know, who'd have thought that'd be the thing?
Yeah, I mean, this is yet another thing where we could be talking about, you know, was Larry Fitzgerald taking up that space last year when, you know, maybe Christian Kirk could have been in there better. But whatever reason that's come about, it's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, it's... slander to say anything against Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona Cardinals fandom. But it does seem to be the case, you know, like Larry Fitzgerald has gone, Christian Kirk's taken up that position, and he's doing a lot better than what Larry Fitzgerald has done the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, really being able to make sure that the Cardinals have a true threat at every wide receiver position, right?
Yeah, because I mean, like, obviously, we also have Rondale Moore, and although he wasn't as impressive as he was the week before, he still made a couple of grabs here and there. And also, there's Chase Edmonds from the backfield continuing to be a dual threat as well. You know, it's not really much he can't do.
Yeah, absolutely. And the backfield as well was really interesting this week with some interesting looks. I don't know if you saw this. Interesting formations.
I did say that. Chase Edmonds, there's nothing he can't do. There is one thing he can't do at the moment, and that seems to be find the end zone.
Yeah, rush for a touchdown. I mean, to be fair, another one of our positives here, James Conner, obviously picking up the two rushing touchdowns as well, clearly is now being favoured and brought in for that purpose.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's what we've brought him in for to begin with, I think. You know, to be like a big goal line back, you know, short yardage type guy, because we never had that on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. It's like almost playing that traditional fullback position.
Yeah, because I mean, there's obviously several times you'd see it throughout the game, really, where we have both Connor and Edmonds in the backfield with Kyler Murray. So it's like pick your poison type thing.
And sometimes as well, they were bringing like, Max Williams into the backfield. Rondale Moore played out of the backfield a few times as well, which was really interesting. But yeah, James Conner, this was really an exhibition, as you said, of like what they brought him in for.
Yeah, but Cliff Kingsbury's not a decent play caller, people tell me. Yeah. And yet this is all the sort of thing that he does.
Yeah, no, I was really pleased with James Conner. Two really, really good scores and showed physicality with both of them, which are, you know, excellent to see.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see someone other than Kyler Murray running a touchdown in. As much as we like to see Kyler Murray scoring touchdowns.
Oh, yeah, of course. But also, you know, when it comes to James Conner, you really know that he can take the punishment as well.
And also my fantasy team would like to see Chase Edmonds sometime or another, you know, get in the end zone.
I'm sure he'll get there in the end. You know, it just comes down to the packages that he's being called for. And I guess, like, that's something as Chase Edmonds you're going to have to deal with, which is, like, there will be situations when you are rushing well and you march the team down the field and it gets to 5 yards and you're called out and James Conner gets the run at the end zone. But, you know, ultimately it's team game and, you know, Conner's clearly got the goods to be able to do that.
I mean, there was a point where Chase Edmonds was ruled down, you know, when we thought he might have made it into the end zone, but that, I think he had his knee down short.
Unfortunate. I feel like a slightly different camera angle would have caught the ball breaking the plane there, but I think we ultimately scored there anyway, right?
Yeah, I think that was one of the short 1 yard touchdowns in the end, or less than half a yard, obviously. I think it might have been the one with Kyler Murray took in himself, actually.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It all blurred together a little bit, especially like recording this on a Tuesday night.
I mean, we do have to be talk as much as we like to talk about the offense, but I think we do need to talk about the defense in this one as well.
I was about to say we need to represent the defense here as well, because ultimately the defense held them to 12 points, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, Byron Murphy was obviously the standout performer in this Arizona Cardinals defense after he came away with two interceptions of Trevor Lawrence, including one for 6.
Did you know that that's the first time he's ever had a multiple interception game?
In his entire career?
In his entire career.
I didn't know that, no.
Don't hold me to that, but I'm pretty sure that that is true. Which is, you know, pretty wild to think about when you, you know, imagine how dominant he's been in some of his games.
Yeah, like, obviously he was the only one who was able to bring in the interceptions, but there were quite a few guys who could have had ones of their own. Like, I definitely remember Isaiah Simmons, like, one of the first couple of plays in the game, actually. Like, he had a good chance of picking off Trevor Lawrence, but the ball just died in front of him, so he couldn't actually bring it in.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, and Marco Wilson as well with a similar one.
Yeah, I think Marco Wilson actually had it in his hands, he just couldn't get it.
Which, you know, ultimately, I think when you are playing in a modern NFL defense, you know, you are trained for the most part to not try and grab the ball. You're trained to bat the ball down, essentially, because it's the higher percentage play than trying to catch it, bobbling it, and eventually going to the correct wide receiver. So, you know, you can kind of forgive them for that. But, I mean, it's good to see for both those guys to have had a chance at it. Also, I think we should say as well that for the Byron Murphy interceptions, big credit to J.J. Watt for huge pressure on that play.
On the pick six one?
On the pick six one, yeah.
Yeah, that was just a weird play in general, because he tried a flea flicker, didn't he? But J.J. Watt didn't buy it at all. And literally as soon as the ball was pitched back to Trevor Lawrence, basically J.J. Watt was in his face.
Yeah, not only that, but then with Byron Murphy, I think, had seen it as well and was following eye lines, and he was just able to get in there and make a play.
Yeah, it wasn't that great of a pass, though. I think he lofted
it
a bit.
No, it was a bit of a duck as well. I mean, you know, it was easy pickings as they come, but regardless, you know, big heads-up play, get into the end zone, and really, I think you could argue that that was the momentum shift of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was enough as well for him to win the Week 3 British Breakdown Player of the Game poll with 72% of the vote.
I believe AJ Green was second with like 20% or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously another week maybe AJ Green could have actually won, but, you know, Byron Murphy pick six, you know, everyone loves a pick six.
Everyone loves a pick six, especially in a game when... I don't know about you, but I spent a lot of that time up to that point going, oh, we might actually lose this. And that's when I kind of started to believe, like, okay, we just need to hold on now.
I wasn't like that at all. Like, obviously, halftime, people are like, the world's ending, you know, everything's going to shit. Like, the Jacksonville Jaguars had just scored and we're going into halftime with a deficit. But it was like, you know, we're playing on the East Coast.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, East Coast. I just have to work it out.
East Coast. Yeah, I get mixed like, up sometimes as well.
It's like, yeah, early kickoff, you know. We always seem to start these a bit sluggish. So we're like,
it's very true, yeah.
Going in at the half, you know, down, you know, it's disappointing to see, but, you know, second half, we're always going to make these adjustments. And, you know, we did. Took the game completely away from Jacksonville and came away with a win. Can't really ask for more.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that I think, yeah, when you're talking about being able to make those adjustments and stuff and coming away with a win, absolutely true. And, you know, it's great to see in the end, but I do think as well, this is a game that we should have commanded from start to finish. You know, this is a game where it is a trap game essentially. And it's the kind of game that we should have been playing the same way we played against the Titans, I think, which is to get in secure early. And that's what I talked about last week was like going to be a key for the game. And we let it get away from us in the first half and spent the rest of the time playing catch up. And I think, you know, ultimately the Cardinals are the more talented team and talent won out. But, you know, the Cardinals don't make it easy on themselves. Let's put it that way.
I mean, it would have been the cardiac cards if they weren't.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I guess a win's a win. We're 3-0. It's the first time we've been 3-0 in 6 years. And, you know, fingers crossed we can keep some of that momentum going into what's going to be a very difficult stretch.
Yep, especially starting in week 4. But before we get onto that, we've got a couple more things to break down, including fantasy football and the weekly pickings for the past week.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I guess fantasy football-wise, I am not having a good fantasy football year at all, coming off of a championship last year. In the Bird Gang Bowl, I lost 174.72 to 181.04 against another Tom. I'm now bottom of that division, which is not great. And then in the Dynasty League, I also lost, I believe, with another score, which is coming up on my phone now, which I really should have in front of me. Yeah, I lost 152.52 to 168.24 against Simon, who's 3-0. That gives me one win across the fantasy season so far, and it's against you.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great for me either, because in the Bird Gang Bowl, the miserable run continued. You know, we were facing defeat for the third successive week, unless Dak and CD Lamb could have combined for 67.5 points on Monday Night Football.
Hey, it could happen.
I mean, it could happen, yeah, but it just didn't happen. I think they got like, I think they probably got like 30 if I was lucky.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just not going my way. So I'm going to have to buy my own Bird Gang Bowl, which can collect my tiers in it. However, in the Dynasty League, I finally got a win. Putting up over it. Yeah. I mean, it was against Dean, who is also a team that was 0-2 going into the game. So it was literally a toilet bowl between the two of them.
in fantasy, it doesn't really matter at that point, right? A win's a win.
Yeah, I mean, I've managed to put up over 200 points with big games from Najee Harris. You know, he actually had 14 catches from a running back.
Yeah, I mean, that's like 14 free points as well. That's wild.
And also Brandon Cooks, Chris Godwin, Jacoby Myers, and Chase Edmonds all chipped in, you know.
It's pretty nice good. To see. Yeah.
And I'm not last, at least for this week, so I'll take that.
I am on my march to last, but yeah, I'm not 100% sure I can turn this season around at this point, but we'll see. I might need to start making some drastic trades, you know.
Yeah, try cashing on guys before they completely become worthless, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've got a bit of an older team in Dynasty as well, so I say.
In the weekly pick'ems, it was not such a hot week for me this week as I finished 10-6. You know, just a meh total, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think anytime you're looking at, you know, about 10 wins in the pick'em, it's like, that's probably just a bit below where you want to be, especially with, I mean, there was a lot of games last week that were quite hard to call, but there was nothing really, I guess you would say. Can you think of like a big upset from last week?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah.
Not like from the straight up or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, there were hard games to call there and you know, games that could fall either way. but we're getting
into
week. That's
the excuse we're going with, is it?
Yeah, that's the excuse we're going with. But we're getting into week four now, and it starts to be the point in the season when you can start to see form a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a few easy picks in this one. There's a few not so easy picks. So kicking off on Thursday Night Football, I think, might be an easy pick. Then again, it might not, because it's Cincinnati against Jacksonville.
Yeah, and you know, ultimately, on terms of balance of form, you have to go with Cincinnati here, despite the fact that Jacksonville showed some promise. I think they need to string together a whole game before I would consider giving them a vote, especially against, you know, a not poor Bengals side.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals have got some decent players, so I'm sticking with them. Washington football team against Atlanta.
This is one of the ones that's a bit more tricky, because I would say it's like two middling teams, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those weird ones. It's like Washington, you know, they've had to change at quarterback, but they've still got that really good defensive line. Atlanta have got a terrible offensive line, so really, you should see Washington's defensive line just dominate, really, but who knows in football?
It's not like Matt Ryan's going to be getting out of there in a particular hurry either.
Yeah, I'm siding with Washington in this one, but I can't see it being that high of a scoring game.
Yeah, I think I'll have to join you with that. You know, I think it'll depend how well Washington's able to get their new QB up to speed and stuff. But yeah, I think Washington's a reasonable choice here.
Houston versus Buffalo. I think this probably isn't one that's going to take too long to decide.
No, I think I'm going with Buffalo. Not the hardest to choose against Texas at the moment, or the Texans rather.
I mean, definitely with the way that Buffalo played last week, you know, Josh Allen, I think he had like four touchdowns or something like ridiculous like that.
I mean, that Buffalo team is starting to look more like the one that I was seeing in the preseason.
Yeah, give me Buffalo as well. Before we move on to Detroit and Chicago.
Not going to be the most fun game to watch, I guess, but I mean, Chicago had like the ninth worst offensive performance in the NFL ever last week. So I think I'm going to go with Detroit.
Yeah, I'm going with Detroit in this one. I think Chicago had something like 1 yard of passing, didn't they? Once you take into account sacks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It was, as I said, it was the ninth worst offensive performance ever recorded. And that's out of a sample size of thousands of games. So
Carolina versus Dallas is an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be tempted to go with Carolina on this one. I think they've got, you know, they've made some changes. They have played well. I think they've got almost more upside than Dallas. Or actually, no, that's a lie. I think Dallas has more upside, but I think that they have not using it as consistently as they could have.
Yeah, I mean, they did look good against Thingy on Monday Night Football against Philadelphia. So. Yeah, I mean, Carolina have started well. I think they're unbeaten, aren't they, as well? So it's like, I'm going to go with Dallas on this one, though, just about. But it could go either way, to be honest.
I think that one's a clear either way choice for me.
Indianapolis against Miami?
Well, Miami's still without a quarterback now, right?
Yeah, they've got, I think it's Jacoby Brissett at backup. So it's like him versus Carson with no ankles. I'm still going with Indianapolis, though.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Indianapolis there as well, just because I think Miami are scrambling.
Yeah, I think that could be pretty much a low-scoring game again. You know, just two decent defenses going head-to-head, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll be a game with some takeaways, that's for sure.
Cleveland versus Minnesota?
This is a tough one, because Minnesota put together a good game against Seattle, but Cleveland are Cleveland, and they're playing really well as well. Do you know what? I think I'm going to go with Minnesota, because I think that their record is unflattering to them, and I think that they will be really, really thirsty for another win here.
Yeah, I'm going the opposite with this one. I'm going for Cleveland.
Don't blame you either. I think Cleveland are probably the favorites.
Yeah, I'm just thinking out how to just cop out, take the favorite.
Well, next up we've got New York Giants and New Orleans, and you already know my rule of not picking a New York team until they prove me otherwise, so I'm going with New Orleans.
I'm going with New Orleans as well. And also, we can quickly zip through the next one, because that's Tennessee versus the Jets. And
obviously, we're both Tennessee. Yeah,
Kansas City against Philadelphia.
I'd almost be tempted to go with Philly just because Kansas City have such a poor record. But again, it's much like Minnesota. I don't think that they particularly deserve the poor record that they've got. So I think I'm going to go with Kansas City here.
I don't think I've ever seen Kansas City bottom of the division.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's mental. But
what a crazy division the AFC West is at the moment.
Not as good as the NFC West, but, you know, second, not maybe. I will take Kansas City, though. You know, they will get it right eventually.
Yeah, yeah, they will. They have to. They're too talented a team to not be pulling out wins eventually. Although, speaking of the NFC West, we've got the first NFC West matchup with Seattle going to San Francisco.
Yeah, this is a tough one again because obviously interdivision, you know, anything could happen with anything.
What I will say is that at the moment, I think that Seattle are underrated and I think that San Francisco are overrated. So I'm going to go with Seattle on this one.
Yeah, I'm joining you on a Seattle bandwagon with this one, you know.
Yeah.
I just don't think San Francisco have got the defensive secondary to keep up with, like, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, if you can bully their Seattle's offensive line, then you can absolutely get Russell Wilson thrown off the back foot and you can get some picks there and stuff. Equally, you know, the Seattle defense has been poor as well, but, you know, I think, as I said, San Francisco is kind of, they've been plaguing injuries, they've maybe been a bit, you know, Yeah, I'm going Seattle on the balance for sure.
Baltimore versus Denver. Another one which I think could go either way, really.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a man who can kick, you know, like to the next stadium over in Mile High Stadium, you know, I'm going to go with Baltimore here.
Yeah, I think this is another one that might be, I mean, it could be high scoring because, you know, who knows which Teddy Bridgewater and Lamar Jackson are showing up. But
Yeah.
I'm siding with Baltimore in this one, just because they might be slightly a bit better, but Denver aren't a bad team.
No, I do think that this is going to be one of the games to watch for sure. I think it's a shame because it's on the same time as our game, right?
It is, yeah. It's in the late slate of games.
Might have to do this one as a picture-in-picture.
We've got Pittsburgh versus Green Bay.
I mean, Green Bay are back on form, really, aren't they?
And Pittsburgh really aren't. Have you seen the videos of Ben Roethlisberger, some of his throws?
Oh, yeah, and the videos of him falling down on his own quite a few times.
Embarrassing. It's like just falling like a tree, nothing under pressure.
Yeah, I can't imagine he's got too many seasons left there because he's also extremely old. No, Green Bay for me. Although I say that going up against Aaron Rodgers, who is also extremely old, but, you know, at least he is playing like a quarterback at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, and onto a third team with a very old QB, Tampa Bay, New England.
Yep. Tom Brady returning back to Gillette Stadium.
What do you think reception's going to be like, Tom Brady turning up in there?
I mean, it's hard. You can't really boo him, can't you? Because the guy won, is it 5 or 6 Super Bowls? It's like,
yeah, exactly. But it's also Boston sports fans, you know?
That's true. They probably forget who he is, you know. It's like, boo that man.
Just boo anyone who leaves. But, I mean, you got to pick Tampa Bay on this one, right? They're on fire and New England are at the early stages of extensive rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, like with the way that New Orleans were able to bully Mac Jones last week, I think Tampa Bay could turn that up even higher and, you know, force him into even more mistakes. So I'm taking Tampa Bay in this one.
I don't think that this New England team is going to be a bad team in the long run. But yeah, I think Tampa Bay is going to be the outright winners here.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously when Bill Belichick's around, you know, New England is still going to be a decent team.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And never discount Bill Belichick being able to pull some, you know, obscure clock management rule out and be able to win a game, you know, outright or whatever. But, you know, it'll be fun to see, I think. But I do think that this is going to be clearly Tampa Bay's game.
And last but not least this week is Las Vegas versus the LA Chargers.
This is a tough one for me because Vegas have been doing not too badly, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've had a good start to the season. I think Derek Carr's up there with Kyler Murray as the two best quarterbacks so far this year.
Yeah, which is pretty wild for Derek Carr. You know, pleased for him because he seems like a nice guy and stuff.
Just like everyone predicted, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's saying, yeah, this is going to be Derek Carr's year. I mean, I would like the Chargers to do well for my fantasy teams because I've got a couple teams with quite a few Chargers on them. I think I'm going to take Raiders here, you know.
Yeah, I'm siding with the Chargers on this one just because they've been playing well. You know, they're coming off beating Kansas City, you know. That's really got to mean something.
Yeah. So just a fun fact to finish out that prediction. Did you know that Red Zone is filmed in the Chargers stadium?
Yeah, I mean, because they've opened up a new thingy outside it, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like a new NFL headquarters, which is like massive.
I learned that on the Dave Pasch podcast when he was talking to Scott Hansen.
Yeah. And it's still green screen now, sadly.
Yeah, unfortunately. I do think they could give that guy a nice set at this point. Like, I would love to see one week when they were just like, do you know what? Scott Hansen's going to watch these games just like you. We've brought in a sofa and some like Doritos for him. Like, they could go nuts with the product placement in that. Can you imagine?
I mean, it's America. Of course they would, product placement.
Yeah. What? They could just like, oh, here's my, I'm having my Pepsi. Oh, hang on a second. My Pizza Hut is being delivered. You know, just like give the guy a break. Let him go pee.
I don't know where to go with that one though.
Well, how about I move us into the game preview when the Cardinals are back at their 9 o'clock time slot when we can watch Red Zone from 6 o'clock as we're known to enjoy. And the Cardinals are heading off to Los Angeles.
To go next door to the aforementioned new NFL studios.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a big one.
It's a massive one. It's one of those ones where it's like, you know, is this going to finally be the year where we are able to beat Sean McVay?
Yeah. How many times have we managed to be beaten by Sean McVay in the past few years? Because it's been a long time. Well, we've never beaten Sean McVay's Rams.
Yeah, I think he's 8-0 now. It's with us against us. Yeah. So, and also, the Rams are 39-0 under McVay when they're leading at halftime.
Which is just wild.
It is. Even if it means like, we do seem to be a bit of a second half team ourselves. So it's like, if we're going into the break, you know, things could get interesting then. Maybe we could be the one in 39-1.
Yeah, I mean, you could hope so. I personally would hope that we would get off to a nice strong start anyway and not need to be losing at halftime. But, you know, we've been slow to start, especially on the road this year. I mean, hell, we were slow to start at home as well. But, yeah, this is... I do feel that if we come away with a win, if we're 4-0 next week, then you'll know that we're on a legit run.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is maybe the biggest monkey on our back, isn't it? You know, beating the LA Rams, so they're not just... Because, you know, we usually talk about previous matchups, but we're not going to bother doing that because who wants to relive all those 8 losses in a row?
I mean,
especially that one that never happened in Twickenham.
Yeah, the one that never happened in Twickenham for sure. But, I mean, also there was the game to close out last year with Chris Streveler. That was a pretty grim one to watch.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you don't want anything like that to happen again to Kyler Murray. So, you know, offensive line, do your job and make sure Aaron Donald gets nowhere near our guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've written it down here. We normally go through danger men, but realistically with the Rams, you're pretty much looking at, you know, all NFL class guys at every position.
I mean, maybe not so much like in the linebacker area because I don't think they've got anyone.
Yeah, but their defensive line doubles as the linebackers anyway, right?
True. It's basically just Aaron Donald and some guys, isn't it, basically?
Yeah. I mean, it's still a...
And also Jalen Ramsey and some other dudes in the secondary.
Yeah, it's still a scary overall looking defense, I have to say.
Look on the offense as well because they brought in Matt Stafford at quarterback and he's pretty much set the league on fire so far, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that you bring in a guy who is an extremely talented quarterback at the best of times and has done well under extreme adversity, and if you give him a good offensive line and some weapons, and he's going to do some stuff, you know?
Yeah, obviously Robert Woods is there. Cooper Kupp, he's another one who's had a really solid start to the season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, both of them, it's like all over the place. And yeah, I mean, the one thing I guess you could say for them is that so far in the season, they've not had a huge running game in terms of overall yards.
No, they haven't. Obviously, with the injury in preseason to Cam Akers, that's really messed with their plans, hasn't it, at the position?
Yeah,
having
absolutely.
To go with Darrell Henderson, and also they traded for Sony Michel from the Patriots, but he's another one who's been like around for a while and maybe doesn't have much left in the tank, sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think this is going to be a big one to tell whether the Cardinals really have a problem, I guess, at run defense.
Yeah, because I mean, like, obviously the big threat from the Rams will be in the passing game with Stafford, you know, Kupp, Woods, Higbee. I'm sure they probably got a couple of others as well, you know.
And I think especially with the Cardinals secondary not being the most experienced secondary in the world. I mean, they're definitely getting better, and we've seen some big plays, you know, and stuff like that. But this is going to be a big test for those guys.
It's going to be a massive test, but, you know, will they fail, or will we actually be celebrating a win next week? Who knows?
I do think if we're going to come out with a win, we need to be looking at a high-scoring offensive performance. Which luckily we've been putting in so far. But, you know, it's going to be a game of attrition at that point, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really tough game, you know. If the defenses from both teams show up, it could be low scoring. If they don't show up, it could be a really high scoring. So,
yeah,
it depends which way you want to go.
I think, kind of regardless, we're going to see some good football, right?
And I wonder if it'll be on Sky Sports because, you know, it's late game. There's not really that much of a competition, really.
Yeah, if you look around who else is there, although they do love to put New England and Tom Brady on, so they might go for that one.
I think that's the Sunday night game, though. So
that's Sunday night, yeah. Okay. Well, who else would be on then, I suppose?
At this 9:25.
Baltimore, Denver?
Yeah, there's that one. There's Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and there's also...
And Seattle and San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there could be other shouts there, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we were blacked out for that.
Which is a shame, but you know, it happens.
It does, yeah. And I think ultimately, like, in a way, it's quite flattering to be blacked out like that.
It's all right. I've just seen they've updated the Sky Sports fixtures. We are live on Sky Sports.
We're on Sky. There you go. Yeah.
So, sorry, anyone who's got Game Pass, you'll have to suffer Neil Reynolds this week. Did I say suffer?
And or, you know, jump onto a VPN.
All that, yes, but we don't condone that sort of thing here.
Just saying, you know, the Netherlands don't have to suffer Neil Reynolds ever, so.
Neither do we if we choose not to watch Sky Sports, but you know, it is what it is.
Anyway, I guess it's about time for us to get on to our predictions.
Yes. Do you want to go first, or shall I go first with my optimistic prediction?
Yeah, do you want to go first?
Okay, so the last time we beat the LA Rams, it was 24-22. Well, I read somewhere the last time there was a score of that magnitude. So I'm going with Cardinals winning 24-22.
Nice.
Not sure how they get to 22, but, you know, it'll happen.
I have to maybe be a bit more of a pessimist here. I think given our track record against the Rams, given the fact that they have as many weapons as they do, I'm struggling to see this one as a win. I think if we can come out with it having scored a lot of points, that could be considered enough of a win in our books. And so I'm going to go with the rare loss prediction, and I'm going to predict that it is a 34-31 loss. Just a massive scoring one.
I mean, that'd be an exciting game for the neutral to watch, but maybe not for us.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, like, I'm only predicting it because I have to. You know, if I could choose not to, I would, because I think, I really do think this one has the potential to go either way. I'm just going with the fact that, you know, historically speaking, let's say, we've bottled this game quite a few times.
Yeah, we'll have to see next week though what the outcome of this game was, because that's the end of the episode for this week.
It is indeed, yeah.
So as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Beard Gang. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Beard Gang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Beard Gang. Buy British Beard Gang merch at britishbeardgang.tmail.com. And also, if you liked what you listened to on the podcast, then leave a review and subscribe so you get the next episode as soon as it's available, which is usually a Wednesday sometime. Depends when I can be bothered to do the editing and all that sort of stuff.
It's a Wednesday, almost always a Wednesday.
Yeah. So obviously, thanks for listening again. And we'll see you again next week, hopefully for another win, but who knows that with the Cardinals.
Would be very exciting to see. Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you again next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.